Hello, and welcome to Irreverent Testimony, brought to you by Netroots Radio, the political podcast by and for millennial and Gen Xer types from a left-wing perspective. It is Saturday, June 17th, 2017. It is Pride Week, Pride Weekend.
In Denver, yes.
In Denver, Colorado.
Yay.
And is it just here? Or?
A lot of cities do it just sometime in the month of June. Mm-hmm. But we are doing it this weekend. We will be attending as soon as we're finished with this podcast.
Yeah.
It's being held in Civic Center Park, and I'm very excited.
Mm-hmm.
I made a rainbow tutu skirt, and it's very cute, and I'm very excited.
I did not make a rainbow tutu skirt, but I will enjoy Rachel's.
Yes.
And we'll be meeting some friends there and loved ones, and it's going to be a whole hootenanny.
Yes.
Down at Civic Center Park.
I'm very excited.
Yeah. Maybe we'll even snap a few pictures and put them up on the website if
yeah.
we can.
Yeah. We can do that.
I always say I'm going to do stuff like that, and then I forget. So it's Rachel's job to remind my dumb ADHD ass to do that.
Okay.
Okay?
Deal.
So, obviously, a lot of crap has happened this week. What I kind of wanted to do was wait till the second half to dive into the latest shenanigans of you-know-who.
Yep.
And maybe talk about some other stuff that shouldn't fall below the radar, but because we live in a crazy universe that, like, 150 days in is, like, the last days of the Nixon administration. Like, yeah. normally stuff that would be huge news
yeah.
is falling, slipping through the cracks. So we're going to extract them for you.
Yes.
And did you have something you wanted to start with, Rachel?
Well, let's talk about Bill Cosby.
Let's talk about Bill Cosby.
So he had his trial this week.
And then it was just this morning it was announced, right?
Yes.
That there is a mistrial.
Correct. The jury deliberated for 3 days. It was 7 men and 5 women.
Mm.
And they could not come to a consensus. And so after the judge urged them multiple times to go back and try again, and finally this morning he declared it a mistrial.
Okay, let's back up a little bit because not everybody are justice nerds.
Right.
Like you and me to a lesser extent. And I've talked to some people that think a mistrial is like 6-6 and they just can't. It's like, no.
That's,
no. It can be 11-1 and
that's
one
correct.
Stubborn, intractable SOB can leave a hung jury. So why don't you kind of explain how you can get to it? And it's not just, in this case, it was a hung jury, but that's not the only way to get to a mistrial. The judge can declare a mistrial.
For a variety of reasons. Yes.
But like, in this case, why don't you explain kind of, we don't know exactly how it went down, but like how
right.
it, basically what a hung jury is.
So, yeah, in our justice system, in the criminal justice system, we require that all 12 jurors come to the same decision. So like you said, it's not like, oh, they were split down the middle, or I mean, it could have been 10 to 2, it could have been 11 to 1, it could have been 6-6, it doesn't matter.
Right.
If all 12 of the people on that jury
can't
did not
agree.
agree that beyond a reasonable doubt he is guilty of this crime, or that there is reasonable doubt that he that potentially he didn't do it, then that's it. Now, a lot of times they'll take, like a lot of times what happens is juries go into the room and they take an initial vote. Right?
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
How's everybody
Straw
feeling?
Vote,
yeah. How's everybody
it?
Feeling right now before we talk about anything? And then, you know, it's kind of like a debate. And the people who stand really strongly on one side and the people who stand really strongly on the other try to convince people on the other side or people who are feeling a little bit wishy-washy in the middle. They go through the evidence. They are allowed to ask questions of the judge through the bailiff. They can request questions about...
They can relook at evidence.
They can relook at evidence.
Yeah.
They can re-listen
testimony.
To testimony.
Yeah.
They can do all of that. And what's really interesting is sometimes what the questions that come out of that jury room are. I didn't hear that they asked any questions. I may
well, we don't
wrong.
Know the details yet.
Right. So I don't know in this case, but oftentimes it's really interesting. Juries are kind of amazing in this way that they take it very seriously. And these are just citizens off the street. These people are not necessarily have a legal background.
Right. Jury of your peers.
Right. And so...
And we could do a whole show on the jury selection process.
Yes.
Which
yes,
we won't.
No. But the defense and the prosecution both have the opportunity to interview in open court jurors and dismiss them based on if they think they have potential biases or that, you know...
Well, they get a certain number they just can dismiss out of hand.
Correct. For
yes, any reason.
Correct. And then and but they only get a certain number.
Right,
so
right. You can't just...
It's complicated, yeah. But anyway, I always find it just fascinating, the questions that come out of the jury room, because I think that... I don't know, it sort of amazes me how seriously they often take it, and the kind of complex legal questions that come out of the jury room. I just think it's sort of amazing that 12 ordinary citizens are tasked with this sort of monumental, can change a person's life, can provide justice to another person, and they do it often very thoughtfully. Now, that's not to say that everyone has biases, and in the other case that we're going to talk about this week, the Philando Castile
mm-hmm.
case was very disappointing. But anyway, so it's a mistrial. So we heard from the prosecution afterward. They did this presser, and the DA came out and kind of did this bizarre, like, aren't we so great and didn't we do such a great job thing, which you and I were talking about.
For like a half hour.
Yeah. And you're like, did you win something? Did
I miss like it? A rambling Oscar award speech.
Yes. But at the very beginning of the press conference, I really appreciated that he said, you know, look, so many sexual assaults go unreported,
mm-hmm.
Particularly when there's been someone's been drugged and they don't exactly remember the details. They fear that they won't be believed or that they won't seem reliable. We understand that this case is important to sexual assault victims everywhere, and we want to make it very clear that we believe you and want you to come forward, and I really appreciated that. But then it was just this weird, like, let's suck our own dicks because we got a mistrial.
Yeah, that was weird, and then something even weirder happened that I'll get to in a second on the Cosby side. But backing up a little bit, let's nerd out a little on the criminal justice system, because there's another big verdict that came down last night that we're going to get to. Now, you described what ideally kind of should happen with juries,
mm-hmm.
but as you and I know from reading books and stories of how major interesting trials went down, you can get in a room and here's a hypothetical. The vote could be 10-2 convict, acquit. The two that are for acquittal are just really, they can bully the other jurors potentially.
Yeah.
Or maybe everybody's been there too long and wants to get the hell out of there.
Yes.
I mean, these are normal people with normal lives. They have jobs and kids and lovers and all the things, just like you and me. And it's a lot, especially if you get sequestered, which I don't think the Cosby jury was sequestered. But the point is, like, there's a lot of dynamics when you get 12 average human beings and they sort of have to now dedicate their lives to this trial.
Yes.
And
particularly if it's very high profile, they feel a lot of pressure from the public to, you know, what does the public want from us and what if we don't do that? But also we have to follow the rules that the judge laid out in voir dire. And, yeah, I mean, it's a lot to ask, and oftentimes, as we have seen, it does not go the way that the average public thinks that it should go. And there are various reasons for that, like I said. And to your point, yeah, you can bully people, and certainly the time consideration is something that I wish we could eliminate.
And if Bob the accountant is the one dissenting voice, but he is just so forceful or boisterous, or maybe sometimes Bob just makes really compelling argument and he can change a lot of minds. There's so many dynamics that go into a jury room. What I really liked about the O.J. Simpson made-for-TV movie is that they went into the jury room quite a bit. And I mean, I don't know how true to life that portrayal was, but they went there and they showed a lot of that.
I didn't see it, so I mean, I'm fascinated by the jury system, and I've always wanted to be on a jury desperately. When people tell me they have jury duty and they seem like they're upset about it, I'm like, oh my God, I'm so jealous. I'd love to, but I'm too much of a criminal justice nerd. They don't want me on their jury.
Yeah, well, some might. I mean, it depends, you know.
Yeah, it does.
I could see some defense teams wanting you.
For sure. Prosecution does not.
Well, maybe.
Because I'm absolutely 100,000%.
If it was a sexual assault case, maybe.
Discrimination. Certainly. But I am 1,000,000,000% behind the idea that we should, innocent until proven guilty, beyond of course, a reasonable
absolutely.
Doubt.
That's the way it works. That's why you need to get 12 people to unanimously decide, or at least unanimously say,
yes.
to get out of there for whatever reason. And then you hope that, you know, their conscience just allowed them to make a decision they actually believe in. We don't know what's in their hearts. To me, because I'm an elitist snob, a jury of your peers is one of the more terrifying terms
yeah.
for me. But yeah. And I'm going to get to that for other public health reasons that may not necessarily have anything to do with criminal justice or sort of loosely related. But the DA is very adamant right away that they want to retry. Now, explain
yes.
the issues with that and why the mistrial is many, many times, in fact, 7-8 times out of 10, I would say really great news for the defense.
Sure. I mean, yeah.
So first of all, explain what a mistrial means in terms of what can or will happen next.
So this gets confusing for some people because we have, as a constitutional right, the right to no double jeopardy, which means you can't be tried twice for the same crime.
Yes.
But what that means is not you can't go on trial twice for the same crime. It's you can't be tried and acquitted
and then retried.
For the same specific crime.
Right.
Obviously, if you're a serial killer, you can be tried as many people as you killed for
right.
the same
but
crime.
But it can't be
but
like
it's not
you murdered
same.
John Smith, got acquitted, and the DA said, well, I'm going to give it another shot
no.
for John Smith.
Exactly. Once the jury acquits you, you're done. It's over. There's no more.
Right.
But the jury didn't acquit him. They didn't
no.
say not guilty. They didn't say guilty. They
didn't
have
a verdict.
So right. that means that it's a mistrial, and that means that the DA can come back and try them again with a different jury.
What's the problem with that?
Well, it doesn't happen often.
No. And why?
Because public pressure often.
Money.
It costs a shitload of money to try these cases, particularly these ones that are so high profile. And what's really shitty, we should explain about the Bill Cosby case, is we know that 60 women have accused him of exactly the same crime,
mm-hmm.
which is he drugged me and he raped me.
Mm-hmm.
There's only one woman
who
currently is inside the statute of limitations
yeah.
to take him to trial.
Which means the other 59 can't even testify? Or?
No, often. The judge doesn't allow in what we call prior bad acts
mm-hmm.
because, as the DA said, we have only one victim in this case. This is not about trying him for all 60 of them. This is about the specifics of what happened to her, when it happened to her, what she remembers. So even though there's a mountain of evidence that obviously he is a fucking sexual predator and a piece of shit, we can't talk about any of that. We
yeah.
can only talk about the very specific instances of what happened to her, when they happened, what does she remember, what evidence do they have that he raped this specific woman.
Right.
And that's very unfortunate. And
it's tough, and that's why we weren't shocked by the verdict at
no,
all.
No, not at all.
And we should also
they
mention...
They did a pretty good character assassination on her,
of course yeah.
which that's what they do.
That's why so many women don't come forward.
Exactly. And
he's a rich guy, high-profile guy.
Yeah, and he's Mr. Huxtable. Dr. Huxtable, you know? People have a hard time believing that Bill Cosby could do this. I think less so now because there's been so very many women. But one of the things that I really would like to advocate for is taking away the statute of limitations on sexual assault. Because I don't understand how, too much time has passed so you didn't do it. Like, these women, these 60 women, 59 of them, will never get to see the inside of a courtroom. Will never get to... have justice.
Didn't they waive statute of limitations on certain things like child molestation? And
it's a state-by-state thing.
Yeah.
And I believe after I think in Massachusetts, they made a specific waiver or whatever for victims of the church when they were kids. But I really
there's a good reason for a statute of limitations that you can probably even just think of if you apply some critical thought to it. I mean, as a whole, there's the reason for the statute of limitations is as time passes, memories can get foggy. It's harder to piece together certain parts of evidence. It's just not as what's the word I'm looking for?
Well, I think. Yeah, I mean, I think part of it, too, is you don't want you don't want to say 30 years ago someone stole my car and I know who it was.
Right.
Okay. But in the cases of sexual assault, because of the way our system is set up, it's so burdensome on the victim.
Isn't it like 10 years or something?
I don't, it's different for every state.
Yeah, but I think in Pennsylvania but or something like that.
It's so burdensome on the victim, and it's so hard. It's a different type of crime. It's a different type of crime than anything else. Mm-hmm. You know, if you get your car stolen, nobody says, are you sure you didn't want your car to be stolen? Right. Are you sure you didn't say he could just have your car? Nobody says that.
You didn't
that.
Leave your car unlocked?
Well, you left it unlocked, so that must mean you wanted that guy to
you
steal
just,
it.
You just got a detail that looks so nice.
No, yeah, no one says that. The only crime that exists that the victim is not believed is sexual assault.
Or questioned as to whether they were actually a victim.
Exactly. And so it makes it very difficult for women to come forward, which is why I believe that the statute of limitations should at least be large. Mm-hmm. And there's other factors as well with sexual assault, which is the destruction of rape kits, the not testing of rape kits.
Yeah, there's the incredible backlog of rape kits all over the country that just haven't been tested.
Yes.
Because these police departments either don't have the resources or aren't interested in processing them.
Yep.
And then a lot of women, after as time goes by, they just want to move on. They don't want to re-experience all that horror that goes with it.
Right. Yeah. But a lot of times these rape kits are being destroyed and the women don't know first.
Yeah.
And so there's been a big movement to, in Colorado, for example, there was a bill that was proposed that said, you have to notify the woman 30 days before its destruction. She is allowed at that point to say, please do not destroy it. And then you must keep it indefinitely. There's a certain percentage of times that there's money that gets allocated to testing old kits. Because the thing about rapists, and Bill Cosby is a great example of this, is that like 98% of the rapes are committed by like 2% of the male population.
Right. Yeah.
And so rapists rape more than one woman generally.
Yeah, yeah.
It's not a one-time thing.
Yeah.
And so when, you know, and sometimes it escalates and they get more violent, but generally there's a pattern, just like with murderers. But the problem with that is that then if a woman comes forward and there's a witness this time and we finally get to know who this guy is and we get him in, there's probably 20 or 30 rape kits sitting there that have his DNA in them.
This is why I love the show. Sorry for a random plug, but Law & Order SVU, even though it's like it kind of goofily dramatizes real life stuff and it gets melodramatic, they talk about all this stuff every episode.
Like, I don't watch it, but I should.
You should. It's all about like the patterns and, you know, following the patterns and what happens to rape kits and why women don't come forward. And it's all that all the time.
Yeah. That sounds like something right up my alley.
Yeah, you would be so hooked. And there's it's been on for like 20 seasons and it won't stop. So people can't stop watching it. So.
Yeah, well, I'll have to watch it.
Because there's also the source material. They basically take real life stories and put a dramatic spin on them. And
they get solved in 1 hour, right? Every time.
Sometimes not. It's really? They give you a little bit of everything.
Well, that's good.
It's not Matlock. They don't get them to confess on the stand usually, only once in a while.
Yeah. So anyway, I think that because it's so high profile, they probably will retry him, hopefully to a greater outcome. And, you know, the DA did say that we're going to be thoughtful and look at, you know, talk to the jurors and look at what we did that worked, what we did that didn't work, try to build a stronger case so that we can convict this man.
Yeah, and we should add, we don't know. Because of all the other crap that's been happening in the world, we were not glued to this case.
No.
And I don't think there was a lot of reporting day to day about how
I heard a little bit, you know, in the middle of the day, when I'm on my lunch break and I'm watching the TV in the break room, I always make it to MSNBC. And there was stuff in the scroll about it that I would read about the character assassination of this woman, and her mother was a character witness. But I really, again, like, this would have been something if the world weren't upside down.
Well, think about this, right?
That I would have followed.
How little must have been going on in late 1994, early 2005, when the OJ trial, every word of testimony every day was just analyzed all day and night on every network.
Yeah.
Because there was really nothing else happening. We were, you know, 3 years into Bill Clinton's first term. None of the Whitewater
Lewinsky
stuff.
Wasn't it
his
second
stuff.
Term that...
No, he got reelected.
Oh, no, I'm thinking of his... Yes, no, I'm thinking
You know, I guess there was sort of a brewing thing in Kosovo happening, but there nothing much else was happening in the world.
And the...
What a simpler time.
Yes, but also, in that case, Rodney King had just happened. And so...
Well, that was the climate for why
exactly,
that all happened.
Why this was incredibly important and was very racialized and very...
Yeah, the LA riots of 92.
Yeah.
They just simmered
down. It was just on the backdrop of that.
And the defense team used that very wisely and effectively.
Yes.
And the prosecution was dumb enough to stick with Furman, but we're not going to get into the fucking OJ trial.
No. But that's... I mean, there is historical context to why that case was so closely followed. He was a celebrity and it was very gruesome, but also on the sort of... You know, in the background of having just had the LA riots.
Well, it consumed everybody for 4, 5, 6 months. I mean, it was all
I remember
day,
all
every
of it.
Day.
I mean, I was a kid. I was young. I was like 11 or 12.
I had just graduated high school.
So, yeah.
There we are.
Mm-hmm.
Anyway, but again, we don't know what happened. We don't know the case the prosecution put forward. We don't know what happened on cross-examination. We don't know the evidence that was... We just have no idea how this trial went. We're obviously upset that there was a mistrial because he's guilty as fuck, obviously. But we don't know how this trial played out. And I don't know if you know the answer to this, but like how many times after a mistrial does a case get retried and actually end up in a conviction? Seems like that would be kind of a rare thing, but I don't know.
No, I don't think so. I mean, most of the time when it's a mistrial, they say, we're going to retry, and then sometimes they do, and sometimes they don't. Sometimes people are convicted,
sometimes
they're
not. Seems
like
a lot of those Dateline murder mysteries, there are mistrials, and then they get a conviction the second time around.
A lot of times. I mean, it just depends on the case. It really just depends on what happened the first time and how they reframe the case the second time. But it just really depends. I don't know the statistic on it, but it really depends.
And mistrials don't only happen for hung juries. A mistrial can happen if a juror stands up and shouts killer, or there's bad evidence
there's
gets put
tampering.
In. There's jury tampering.
There's all kinds of things.
Yeah, hanky panky by the defense or the prosecution. There's all kinds of things can happen.
All kinds of things. But it's a judge that declares it a mistrial.
Right.
There's also, when I was in college, we were talking about what happens when a judge falls asleep. Which totally fucking happens. Now, the judge is not going to, declare that to be a mistrial, obviously. But basically what happens is the defense just goes, okay, great. Well, nothing matters now. Convict my client or don't convict my client. But on appeal, you're done. The judge fucking fell asleep. But anyway, so that's Bill Cosby. He's a fucking garbage person and a rapist, and I hope he goes to jail.
Well, one more thing about that. His defense attorney and his wife or daughter or somebody got up.
Yeah, Camille Cosby. I don't know.
I think it's his very young wife.
I don't know who
no,
she
it's
is.
Not
we
his
could,
wife.
We could
I
look
think it's
it
his daughter.
Up.
But anyway, she got up and just went on a tear against the prosecution and the judge and everybody. And it was really weird because that's something you do if you're trying to lay the groundwork for an appeal. It's not something you do if you just got a mistrial.
It was really weird.
Yeah.
I agree. And also, these people are going to retry Bill Cosby and you just shit all over them. Like, it's not a
great
idea.
It's not
idea.
That they necessarily need any more motivation.
No, it's his wife. Bill Cosby's wife. Camille. Okay.
Well, yeah, but I think his daughter read the statement. Like, she wrote the statement.
It was Camille Cosby's representative who read the statement. But she was very impassioned about it.
Oh, no. They like, and I understand the emotion, so they're genuinely pissed off. But now you're really coming across as hostile.
Yeah, it was very strange.
To new potential jurors.
To the same judge. Same judge will try
this
case
the second
time.
Of course, the new potential jurors, they'll try to say, hey, you didn't hear anything about that first trial, right?
Yeah, like, you don't know anything about Bill Cosby, right?
Yeah, that's why these high profile, it's tough to find a jury.
It is, very.
But anyway, I guess we'll move on from that now and talk about the verdict that came down last night about Fernando Castile.
Philando, yes.
Philando Castile in Minnesota. A lot of people were worried there were going to be riots. I haven't heard that. I think most of the protests in Minneapolis and the surrounding areas were actually peaceful, which is good. But anyway, the officer who murdered Philando Castile, was acquitted.
Acquitted. Because we have so far, in the deaths of these hundreds of people of color,
unarmed
people shot by police, murdered by police, had no convictions.
Nope.
Not one.
No.
No. And that's if the officer even gets charged. And in most of these cases, they're not even charging the officer.
Yep.
So it's fucking depressing. It's infuriating. It's when we say Black Lives Matter, obviously they don't. I mean, that's why it's named that.
Mm-hmm.
Because they do, and our justice system does not reflect that.
So why don't you remind people of exactly what Philando Castile did to get shot?
Nothing.
Literally.
Literally nothing. But let me pull it up really quick.
Which was even acknowledged by the defense. The defense's strategy was he looked like a guy that the cops were kind of looking for.
Yeah.
And something.
All right, so. Thousands of people are currently protesting. 18 people have been arrested. It's just horrifying. All right. Officer Yanez was the officer charged with second-degree manslaughter, so not even murder, and endangering safety by discharging a firearm in the shooting. It was announced Friday afternoon after 5 days of deliberation, and he was acquitted. This was so heartbreaking. His mother said the only tattoo that he had was a tattoo of the Twin Cities.
Mm-hmm.
He loved the city, and the city killed him. Anyway.
So can I scroll up a little bit? Because it says what Officer Yanez testified.
That he feared Mr. Castile was grabbing for the gun. So Philando Castile was also a registered gun owner.
Mm-hmm.
Who had a legal weapon on his body that he,
I believe... No, I think it was in the glove compartment. I don't think it was on his person. I'm not sure.
I think he told the officer, though, right? Let me look.
Yeah. Yeah, so, anyway, we're looking it up. It's very typical. And when the announcement of the acquittal came through, neither Rachel and I were shocked, surprised, taken aback.
Nope.
It's very sadly what we expected. We actually would have been pretty shocked and surprised and
heartened.
Yeah. If there was a conviction.
Yes.
Of anything. Of any kind. So.
I'm sorry. I'm having a hard time because it's sort of an older case. They want to talk about the trial, but I'm not finding exactly what happened. I don't remember exactly.
Philando Castile really basically didn't do anything. He was with his wife and kid in the car.
Yes. His young daughter was in the back seat.
They got pulled over and he pretty much immediately got shot.
Yeah.
And died.
Yeah. Mr. Castile was licensed to carry a gun and was recorded on a dashboard camera video calmly telling Officer Yanez that he had a weapon in the car. He told him not to reach for the weapon, and Mr. Castile and Ms. Reynolds both tried to assure the officer that he was not doing so. Within seconds, Officer Yanez fired 7 shots.
Yeah, and you know, funnily enough, the NRA hasn't come to this guy's defense. Here's a registered gun owner who had a gun on his person.
And did the smart thing and said, "Officer, I want to let you know that I am a registered gun owner and I have a legal conceal and carry permit,
mm-hmm.
and I just want to let you know." And so you can't, so you get shot for that? I feel like the NRA should be like, you don't shoot people for that. But he's black, so.
Yeah.
Only white people get to have guns.
No, we saw all those YouTube videos of the Oath Keeper type people and the sovereign citizens walking around with their automatic weapons strapped to their back, and the cops try to talk to them, and they lose their shit, and they do not get shot. They do not get arrested.
Nope. They get calmly explained to that they are not actually sovereign citizens, and that, I'm sorry, sir, but you do have to show me your license, and can you please stop being hysterical? And I would like to take that weapon, please, and just very calmly explain how the law works. If you're black and you admit to having a legal firearm, you get shot.
Shoot first, ask questions later.
Yes. And this sort of character assassination that came after this, too, because there was marijuana found in the car, so that's a good reason to shoot someone as well. And they thought he was a robber, and it's all bullshit.
His nose looked like the nose of the robber or something, and also maybe he was high on weed, or I don't fucking know. Anyway, it's horrifying.
It's terrifying, horrifying,
and they
tragic.
Couldn't even convict on manslaughter.
No.
Which is basically like, oops.
Yeah.
Oops, I shot
I didn't
the
mean
guy.
To shoot him seven times. Oops.
We couldn't even do that.
No.
So, on and on and on it goes. And, you know, our, quote, progressive friends say, don't worry about the stuff. We need to get the white working class guy in the diner who says Philando Castile had it coming. So.
Yeah.
Actually, how about no and go fuck yourself?
Yeah.
And yeah. That's not what our movement is about. If you want to start, like, a separate pseudo progressive movement for angry white people, good luck with that. I'm not going to be a part of it.
Nope. I will continue to stand with and use my power and privilege till my dying breath to stand for people who have less of it than I do.
So what else do we got before, you know, we get to all the crazy you-know-who stuff before I go on my vaccine rant?
Okay. I want to talk about something a little lighter. You sent me a text message on Friday that was a tweet thread about a script for Wonder Woman.
Oh, God, the Joss Whedon thing.
That was written 10 years ago by Joss Whedon and fucking Christ never saw the light of day.
Well, it was a Wonder Woman script.
Yes, Wonder Woman.
Which we still haven't seen.
No, and I still really need
Full disclosure, we tried to go last week and we couldn't get a friggin' Tuesday showing.
Seriously.
It was all booked up.
They oversold the show, and then the next showing they were putting people from the first showing into, and they had like two seats in the very front row, and we were like,
maybe
no.
This coming Tuesday we'll finally get there.
Yeah. Okay, so this tweet thread is amazing. It's this woman who is reading the script that Joss Whedon wrote and tweeting about it, and it is fucking horrifying.
Now, we don't even know how she got a hold of the script, but Joss Whedon and no one has denied that the script is legit, so it seems to be legit.
Yeah, yeah. Yeah, it sure does. Basically, she was saying it really irritated her because, you know, she had such a visceral reaction to the film that did happen. That it was, she cried and it was so moving, and that reading this was just like a fucking punch in the gut. Like, it's just so horrifying. So I'm just going to pull up, her little tweet storm here and just read a couple of little gems that were in this script that Joss Whedon decided,
couple of pieces of disclosure first. Obviously it never got made into a movie. So if you did shop it to a studio, they hopefully laughed him off. Or just it wasn't, probably more likely is it superhero movies weren't big back then. And number two, it could have been a first draft. So who knows? But this is what came out of this guy's head at some point.
Yes. She says, in an alternate universe, we sat through 3 hours of Mutant Enemy Presents DC's Wonder Woman, Steve Trevor, Origins. Very feminist. Steve. Sorry, Hippolyte. The law considers every life. Every woman on this island is under my protection. Thousands of lives to weigh against one. Steve, your math's a little off, Your Majesty. Steve, the refugee camp I was headed for, they've cut off from the mainland for months for border wars. They're sick and starving. My people have been negotiating and scratching. So this is about Steve, really. This isn't about Diana. This is about Steve.
Is the Chris Pine character, I'm guessing.
Yes. There's one... So, if you don't know anything about Wonder Woman, she lives on this island that's just women.
Well,
it's Amazon warriors.
From.
Right. Yeah. That's where she comes from. And he ends up on this island somehow. And then she comes back with him. I don't know. I haven't seen the movie. But so, Joss Whedon decides that what would be really smart is if all the women on this island who've been living there for centuries and there's no men, all they were really doing that whole time was just waiting for a man to
praying.
Drop in.
Praying for a man to show up.
He is the answer to their prayer. Like, literally, these two women are talking, and one of them says...
You think you're the only one
he's the answer to their prayers? And also, Wonder Woman learned how to kiss from the other ladies, so that's how come she's so good at it now. And it's super hot. It's like what you said. It's like a 15-year-old's fucking wet dream fan fiction about Wonder Woman.
Yeah, yeah.
It is the least feminist thing ever. Ever. So anyway, it's out there. You can go find it and read it. I wouldn't recommend it.
If you kind of want a laugh and then to get infuriated, the person who did the tweet storm is Rave Sashayed.
Yes, @_SASHAYED. I retweeted it. You retweeted it. You can find it from us. Here's my final one. Diana reaches the middle of the floor.
That's Wonder Woman.
She raises her arm and holds still, turns her palm in, and brings her arm down with ritualistic rigidity. This could go very badly. Then she moves her leg back and turns fluidly, a curve rippling up her body as she folds into a dance that is sensual, ethereal, and wicked sexy. Literally says wicked sexy. This is not a warrior march, though it remains idiosyncratic. It is neither out of place nor unnoticed on the crowded floor. Angle, Griffin and Ben watch, enraptured. Ben, are you watching this? Griffin, big-eyed. It's like Christmas.
So Wonder Woman is there to gratify the men with her sexy dancing.
Yes.
After or before she saves the world, maybe.
But they probably will save her instead, because they do. That's the other part of it that's super depressing, is that she is basically like, there's like torture porn of Wonder Woman, and she's humiliated, and she's broken, and she's not strong, and they come save her, and that's Wonder Woman.
Well, Christopher Nolan did that with Batman, too, but, you know.
She's fucking Wonder Woman.
She's Wonder Woman, yeah.
She saves the world. She gets to be her own hero. Just because she's a woman doesn't mean she's fucking saving. She's the hero. She's the fucking superhero. It's so infuriating. It's so infuriating. But apparently this movie that actually happened, that they paid for, doesn't do any
like
of that
this.
Shit. It is. She's the hero, and she saves the day, and not the men.
Yes.
So I'm glad that that exists and not this fucking garbage, but it's so frustrating. Yeah, it makes me crazy.
Now I want to get into vaccines for a hot minute.
Okay.
So it was reported just a couple days ago that the annual Colorado annually reports the percentage of vaccination compliance or vaccination waivers for school children in the state of Colorado. Let me explain that a little bit. So you're considered to be in compliance if A, obviously your kids are vaccinated as they should be, or B, you've signed the correct waiver. And Colorado has a very sort of broad waiver where you can opt out if you cite religious, medical, or I think what they call personal reasons.
Yes.
And it's one of the more lax opt-outs in the country. California's used to be
Oregon.
Very, very lax. And then there was a big measles outbreak at Disneyland, and the state said, fuck this. And now it's much more restrictive. The good news is Colorado was shown to be in high compliance. Oh, and there's another layer to this. The legislature, I think it was around the time of the whole Disneyland thing, passed another law that said, okay, you can't only report the
compliance.
You have to report how many opted out
yes.
and are just not vaccinated.
Yes.
And I don't know how that broke down over party lines, but I'm about to take a shot at our own people, our own liberal
yep.
friends here. So
yep.
don't worry about the partisanship part right now. The good news, Colorado is highly compliant. Denver with the highest compliance rates. It's up in the mid 90%, which is good because anything over 90%.
Not just compliance, that's people who are actually vaccinated.
Vaccinated is what I meant.
Right.
Yeah. And over 90%, scientists for the most part feel pretty good about herd
immunity
holding up.
Okay, good.
Once you get below 90%, things get potentially dicey. And we had an incident in Greeley last year, where a school district that was had a lot of opt-outs or non-compliance, there was a big spike in whooping cough. And if you don't know anything about whooping cough, it's basically 3 or 4 months of pure hell for the entire family. Nobody gets any sleep, and it can kill you.
Yes. And if you really want to know anything about whooping cough, I highly encourage you, even though it's really upsetting, to go online and just look for a video of a child that has whooping cough, or even just audio of it. Listening to a child that has whooping cough is really, really upsetting. I mean, it sounds like they're going to die at any moment. They can't breathe. And they're crying, and they can't breathe, and they're cough. It's just, listening to it is literally heart-wrenching, and I don't have children. And it makes me want to, like, crawl through the computer and fix that child. Imagine if it's your own child. And this goes on for 3 or 4 months. So yeah, it's serious. And it absolutely can kill you, particularly if you have any sort of other compromised health conditions.
You essentially don't sleep for 3 or 4 months because it gets worse at night. And okay, everything kind of settles into your lungs. During the day, usually the kids are more or less okay for the most part. They can even kind of go outside and play. At night, they cannot stop coughing. And okay, they cannot sleep. And their parents can't sleep. And
it's just horrible. It's yeah, a horrible thing for a child to have to go through. It's awful.
And the whole family.
Yes.
Like, there's a yes, really great op-ed from a parent who was stupid enough to watch some dumb Rob Schneider video and decide to not vaccinate her kids. Maybe actually it might not have been that recent. It might have been a little longer ago. But then her one summer, all her kids got whooping cough.
Oh my God.
Yeah, like all three of them or four. And she recounts how that went and how it went down and basically said, oh my God, was I fucking stupid? Please don't be stupid like me. Vaccinate your goddamn kids, idiots.
Yeah.
And I highly recommend finding that. Unfortunately, I don't remember what the title is. But anyway, there's a hot spot for high unvaccinated rates, and it is in Boulder.
Of course it is.
Our good friends in Boulder. And actually, there was a piece of where the highest non-vaccinated rates are, not only in Colorado, but throughout the country. And it is affluent, educated, highly liberal enclaves of people.
White people.
White people, generally. But also in some immigrant communities, it's starting to pop up too, because the anti-vaxxer people have started to push this on immigrant communities of Somalis and people from
Jesus,
West Africa and some others to try. And there's a lot of cultural undertones here, but they've like brought in some superstition type stuff, and it's really horrible and disgusting. But the point is, everybody's prone. Everybody's prone to this stupidity.
But the problem of this anti-vaxxer shit is not coming from the right. It's coming from the stupid left.
Well, it's starting to percolate on the right, too, which was what has me concerned.
But right now, we are the problem.
We are the problem,
not
absolutely.
Us. Obviously, we are staunch, science-believing, non-crazy people who think you should fucking vaccinate your kid. And if you don't, you're being irresponsible not only for your child and your family, but for everybody fucking else. And I swear to God, I'm just going to go like vigilante and just start like poking needles in kids that aren't vaccinated because it's ridiculous.
Well, Germany has started this thing where they want kindergartners to rat on their parents if they don't get them vaccinated.
Sweet.
And you get fined.
Great.
Anyway, so let me pull up this bit of article from this outbreak that happened in Greeley, which is about an hour north of here, last year. The most 10 affluent schools in the district out of 30 account for 47% of the district's exemptions. The exemption movement has spread throughout the United States, but has hit hard in Colorado, which has some of the nation's loosest rules for avoiding required vaccinations, the AP reported recently. Parents must say they have a medical, moral, or religious objection, and their kids are home free. A new Colorado database to track kids who have not been vaccinated is moving through the legislature, and I think that passed last year. But not all congressional representatives think, quote, parent shaming is the correct route.
I do.
Yeah, me too. If I think fining is the correct route. If it were, the shame wouldn't be focused on Greeley or even Frontier. There were at least 3 Boulder Valley schools with the exemption rates above 50% this past year.
That means more than half of the children that go to these schools are not vaccinated. That is dangerous. Yeah.
Boulder Valley, with its liberal, affluent, and highly educated population, accounts for 7 of the 10 schools with the state's highest exemption rate, according to a Denver Post story from last year. They're talking about 2015 now, but it's about the same this year. School numbers are available thanks to a 2014 Colorado law. Okay, so that's when that law passed.
Okay.
The rise in vaccine exemptions has mirrored the rise in what health experts call, quote, vaccine-preventable diseases. Jesus. Whooping cough, which has recently set its sights on Frontier, used to occur in about 150 times per year in Colorado. That number of cases hovered around 1,500, so a 1,000-fold increase, if I'm doing my math correctly.
150 to 1,500.
Yeah, 1,000-fold.
Fucked up.
1,000% increase, 10-fold increase, mercifully dropping to 915 last year. Weld County, there were a bunch, 183 and 24, blah, blah, blah. Pertussis More commonly known as whooping cough, is highly contagious and can be deadly to children younger than two, as well as the elderly and immune-impaired people. It can occur in immunized individuals, but the health department says the best way to prevent it is to be up-to-date on vaccinations with whooping cough. It's the DTaP, and health department officials recommend booster shots, Tdap, every 5 years. They talk about herd immunity. Further, officials from the Colorado School of Public Health told the Post a population must have high enough vaccination rate to protect vulnerable kids. The Weld County Department of Health would prefer a rate of 100%, but thresholds vary from 90 to 95. Yada, yada.
Hearing what you basically just said. Yeah. But, yeah. And it's not just Colorado. It's happening all across the country thanks to fucking Jenny McCarthy and
Dr. Jill
Stein.
Robert De Niro.
All these
Robert
fucking
F. Kennedy
Robert
Jr.
Robert De Niro?
Yeah. He's
what?
An anti-vaxxer.
Oh, for fuck's sake.
He has a kid with autism, and he thinks it has something to do with vaccines.
You know what I read recently? First of all, that's bullshit. It's bullshit, it's bullshit. Don't let anyone tell
it's
you that that's true.
It's been debunked thoroughly.
There is a story that the study just came out that said there is a very strong link to a woman who is pregnant having a fever at any point during her pregnancy and resulting with a child with autism. Mm-hmm. In women who had a fever above 99 degrees in their second trimester, they were 40% of them had children with autism. So maybe there's your link.
40%, or was it 40% higher?
Higher, that's what I meant. I'm incidence. Sorry. Yeah, higher incidence of having autism. Yeah. Children with autism.
That's interesting.
Yes, it is. It just came out. So there's a lot of explanations, I think, that we're going to start to see about where autism comes from, or maybe it's just that we're, you know, diagnosing it better, or better able to recognize people that are on the spectrum, da da da. The point is, it has nothing to do with vaccinating your kid. Please, dear God, please.
Yeah, I have no more patience for anti-vaxxers.
No.
I have no more sympathy. I have no more. It is a public health menace.
Yes.
And now we have a commander-in-chief who's kind of into the anti-vaxxer movement.
Yeah.
You know, nothing has happened policy-wise yet to address that, but he had this commission set up with Robert F. Kennedy Jr., what they called the Vaccine Commission, and that's frightening. We don't know what's coming of that or if anything's coming down the pike, but keep your eye on it.
Yep.
So we're going to take a break. When we come back, we're going to talk about the crazy week in Washington, which I know you've all been waiting for, and we'll get there then. Don't go anywhere. We'll be right back. Irreverent Testimony. So we touched on some non-DC centric stuff in the first half, and now I guess it's time to get to all that other crap.
The spectacle that is the President of the United States.
Well,
whatever.
Things are getting hairy.
They are, very much so.
Robert Mueller's investigation is heating up.
He announced this week that Trump was under investigation.
No, he did not announce that.
Okay.
He did not announce that.
It was announced this week.
It was leaked.
It was leaked, whatever, that Trump is under investigation for possible obstruction of justice.
Yeah, directly.
Directly.
Officially. Not anymore this dancing around the fringes of, well, we're not looking at you, but people in the campaign. It's like, no, now they're looking at him.
Yes.
And this revolves around the Comey firing.
Yes.
And Trump is apparently losing his mind. He's yelling at TVs. Trying to throw Rosenstein under the bus. The other night, I think it was Thursday or Wednesday, Rosenstein released a really bizarre statement.
Cryptic statement. I'm going to read it real quick.
Yeah, go ahead.
And then, of course, Trump fired back and, you know.
Fired back seemingly at Rosenstein, but it's very weird.
This is what Rosenstein said. And remember, he's the Deputy Attorney General. And he's in charge of this whole thing because
Sessions recused himself.
Sessions recused himself,
sort of.
So he's overseeing the Mueller investigation.
Yeah.
quote, Americans should exercise caution before accepting as true any stories attributed to anonymous, quote, officials, particularly when they do not identify the country, let alone the branch or agency of government with which the alleged sources supposedly are affiliated. Americans should be skeptical about anonymous allegations.
Okay. Okay. I think Rachel Maddow had the same exact reaction, like, okay, what the fuck does that mean? Okay. So this is what I think that was trying to say. On the surface, it sounds like he's trying to hint that the stories that had come out about Trump being investigated for obstruction of justice were sourced by foreign diplomats or agents.
Or that it's Russian hackers doing fake news or...
Right, maybe that's the direction. But
I don't know.
It is such a bizarre statement from the deputy AG in the middle of all this to make about a news story. You just don't do it.
It's very strange.
You don't make a public statement. If you're asked about it, maybe you say something cryptic, but, you know, it's like, this is what I think happened. I think Trump said, you go out there and you say I'm not being investigated.
Mm-hmm.
And I think, like, Rosenstein tried to massage that in the best pseudo-cryptic way possible. Or Trump said, you say that it's the Russians that are leaking that I'm being investigated.
Yeah.
Yeah, something to that
it's
effect.
It's not real. It's not real. But tell him. Tell him, Rod. And he was like, I don't want to do that. Jack Goldsmith had this. He's a Harvard University law professor and senior Justice Department official. The George W. Bush administration immediately tweeted after his statement, quote, and the Deputy Attorney General should have better judgment. And that's that. So then Friday, after that statement came
Friday
out,
morning.
Friday morning, Trump decided to tweet this little gem. I am being investigated for firing the FBI director by the man who told me to fire the FBI director. Witch hunt.
Does he mean, he guess he means Rosenstein?
I read that and I was like, what's happening? What are you fucking talking about? First of all, to his own admission, he asked them to write him a statement, but he'd already decided he was going to fire Comey.
Yeah, everybody keeps forgetting that. He told Lester Holt that in no uncertain terms.
Yes, I was already going to fire him before the memo. I already knew I was going to fire him. And then he told the Russians he fired James Comey because it would relieve so much pressure.
I know, but let's forget about the Russian thing for a second. Him telling Kislyak and the other Sergey. Let's just focus on what everybody heard and saw him tell Lester Holt in that interview.
Yes. I was going to fire him anyway. The memo had nothing to do with it.
I mean, are we now in this place where we try to exonerate Trump because we guess when he's full of shit and when he's not? I don't think so.
Like, I sort of love James Comey in his testimony because he said, look, I didn't know why I was fired, but I'm going to take the president at his word. He told us that he fired me because of something having to do with the Russia investigation. He didn't like my handling of it. He thought it would relieve pressure, and he had already decided prior to the memo about my handling of the Hillary Clinton email investigation that he was going to fire me. So,
and Trump confirmed that.
Yes.
So why is it still a topic for debate?
Why is it when he says the guy who told me to fire him? Like, no, you told him to write a memo explaining why you were going to fire him that was bullshit, and he did. And that's the other thing with these people. Trump told them to write this memo, and they did, and then he went off script, and they now are going back and saying, well, no, I wrote it because I believed that was true. And Jeff Sessions is like, who testified this week also.
Yeah, we didn't even get to the Sessions testimony, which
we will.
Was a
but
lot of obstruction.
He said, you know, I was just really unhappy with his job performance and, you know, all this stuff. And somebody asked him, did you ever tell Comey? Did you have a conversation with him about his job performance or his concern? Uh-huh. Yeah. No. Oh, okay. So, okay. Did you tell anyone else that you were concerned about his job performance? No. Okay.
Is Washington, D.C. a right-to-work state?
Well, you serve at the pleasure of the president.
Yeah.
So, he doesn't have any rights. But it's all very bizarre.
It's not that Jeff Sessions necessarily needs to justify that legally, but if you're trying to make an argument to insulate yourself and the president from an obstruction of justice case, and your argument is, we fired him because he was doing a shitty job. Okay, and when did you notice or tell him he was doing a shitty job? Oh, we didn't.
I didn't. And the thing is, it doesn't matter because president, as we've said a million times, said, no, that's not true.
That's what's driving me crazy, right? Because I'm reading all these pieces from New York Times and Washington Post and everywhere else, like, well, it's the president's word versus James Comey onto why his... It's like, no, they actually both agreed. Yes, Trump and his people keep saying contradictory things, but when James Comey says, and his people and the leaks say, he got fired because of the Russia investigation, and Trump goes on national TV and says, I fired him because of the Russia investigation, why are we still debating
There's no debate. That's why he was fired. Everybody knows it, and Mueller knows it.
Unless you want to write... Comey and other sources say he was fired because of the Russian investigation, and Trump also said it, but maybe in that moment he was just bullshitting, and in reality these other things he said, it's like, that's so stupid. Why would, you know, but that's, it's like,
it's so fucking crazy that we just can't believe it.
We can't, like, wrap our head around what's
happening.
Yeah,
so we're trying to make excuses for this man. Stop it. Stop.
Well, we're trying to make...
Listen to what he says and believe him.
We're trying to make excuses to paint a picture of there's a president who's in trouble, but, you know, he might not be guilty, so this is his argument. But he's all over the place with his arguments, including a lot of self-incrimination.
Yes.
So nobody knows how to handle that.
Nope.
Basically. And that's where we are.
Yeah.
It's like, I mean, everybody keeps forgetting about that Lester Holt interview. Yeah, it's driving me crazy.
I know. We, like, should just play it. Did I imagine over and over. It? No, I watched it. Literally, I watched it. And I was like, what is happening?
Watch it?
What is happening right now? What? Oh my God. Oh my God. He did not just say that. Holy fuck. Right?
But then he also confirms, because Thursday night, a bunch of right-wing Twitter and Hannity and Fox News jumped all over the Rosenstein statement and said, aha, the president maybe really isn't the focus of an investigation. And maybe it's foreign agents, because that's what Rosenstein was hinting. Mm-hmm. And then the very next morning he says, I am under investigation. And they tried to spin it with, like, well, he didn't really mean he
him
was
personally.
Under investigation. He meant that the story said he was under investigation. It's like, no, that's not what he said.
No.
Then he would have said, this bogus story says this.
It's fake
and
news.
If it's true, that's crazy, because the guy is like, if you did that, it's a crazy thing for a president to say, but at least I could follow the logic train.
Yeah.
Right?
Yeah.
Like, that's not what he said. He said, I am under investigation.
Yes.
But, you know, by the guy who told me to fire Comey. Is that some shit, huh, guys? And I'm like, he's throwing Rosenstein under the bus now? What the fuck?
Uh-huh. Uh-huh.
So everybody assumed that was Trump paving the way to fire Rosenstein and other officials at the Department of Justice to pave the way to get rid of Mueller, basically the new Saturday Night Massacre.
Yes, which literally playbook. Like, just follow the playbook of that is what he's doing. Like, he's been asked all these questions.
That's the thing, Rachel. I don't know if he is following a playbook. I think he's just lashing out.
He is. But I don't think he understands the historical context and what he's doing.
Oh, he doesn't care.
But it's crazy to look at the parallels. Like, it's crazy to look at the parallels.
Oh, it is. But you know what? This is not the same Congress.
Nope.
Like, I'm not convinced. Nope. Like, Ted Lieu and other people are saying, if he went and did that, then he's done. He's going to get impeached. I'm not convinced of that.
I'm not convinced of anything. No.
That this Congress would you know, they'll make a few more excuses and, you know, hope they can hold out till they pass their tax bill and their health bill and destroy the country, and then, okay, maybe we'll throw Pence in there so we can pass more bullshit.
But
I'm not convinced.
I'm not either. No, I have no faith in the Republican delegation in Congress at all.
No.
Zero. But what's really interesting to me is Daddy Pence lawyered up. He hired a top criminal defense attorney to personally represent him.
Yes.
In the Mueller investigation.
Yes.
Then President Trump's personal lawyer hired a criminal defense lawyer of his own.
The lawyers are lawyering
the
up.
The lawyers are lawyering up. It's fucking crazy.
Who's gonna represent the lawyer who's the lawyer for the lawyer?
Yeah, I don't know. I mean, lawyers have got to be so happy right now.
Is your firm getting a call?
I don't know.
Not yet?
We're not out of D.C. We're only in the West, but...
Okay.
Yeah, so it's just crazy. And I think the fact that Pence lawyered up tells me he's worried. And all of this rhetoric around all of this,
Pence
have
a
any
bit,
shit
right?
on him, and he's Mr. Clean Boy. I think it's falling apart.
Let's back up and talk about Pence, right? Because Pence, what we assumed, and what the media certainly has assumed, that Pence keeps getting, quote, set up.
Mm-hmm.
That he's out there and he said, no, Michael Flynn never talked to the Russian ambassador. No. And that was bullshit. Mm-hmm. And they used, quote, the lying to Pence's justification to fire yep. Flynn. And then he came out there and said, no, nobody from the team met with the Russians at the... or what? He keeps denying all the stuff yeah. that, like, gets proven to be bullshit, like, in a day or two.
Yeah.
And everybody assumes that poor Pence is being set up. Or
he couldn't possibly have anything to do with any of this. Poor guy.
Then another alternative is Pence is in neck deep with this shit as much as anybody else.
Of course he is.
They're just really bad at covering it up.
Yeah. So he got his own literally like high-powered criminal defense attorney.
Yeah.
To personally represent him in this investigation.
And was in Indiana ostensibly doing a fundraiser for it.
Uh-huh. Because he doesn't have a lot of money.
He has a pack.
He has a pack, but he personally isn't wealthy. Yeah. Like a lot of politicians are wealthy.
Which, because of Citizens United and some other things, there's really nothing illegal about having a political action committee and having the money from that going to your own personal criminal defense.
If you're stupid enough to give him money for that, then I don't give a shit.
His people in Indiana are, I'm sure.
Yeah, so...
He's the vice president.
I think... I don't know. The president's been being asked by all these reporters, are you going to fire Mueller? Are you going to fire Mueller? And
he can't directly deny it. Mueller.
No, he cannot. But the implication, obviously. But he hasn't denied it. His attorney has said it's certainly an option on the table. Maybe not understanding that, like you said, he personally can't fire Mueller, but he can make Rod Rosenstein fire Mueller.
And if Rosenstein he won't do says that, no, he could
then
fire
he fires Rosenstein,
and then whoever else would say
somebody
no.
Somebody else will say no, and then we'll just tell, just like, what, a clerk?
And then it's up to Congress, and I just don't think there are enough Republicans in Congress that are willing to bite the bullet yet. I think the approvals would have to get to like 25%. They're hovering around 35% right now.
Yeah.
Depending on which poll you look at, and it's such an echo chamber, and Rasmussen has them at 50, so we could be a long way.
Yeah.
Long way from anything close to impeachment hearings. But anyway, so the lawyers are lawyering up. Pence is lawyering up. The Mueller, we know, or at least we hear, that Mueller is directly investigating Trump for obstruction of justice. He's investigating Kushner for his financial ties.
Yes, that's the other thing I was going to say, that Kate, that was leaked, was that there's also an investigation about possible financial crimes in the Trump family,
mm-hmm.
broadly.
Yeah.
So.
Again, the investigation may reveal nothing.
They're money launderers.
Yeah.
For the Russians and the mob in New York and New Jersey.
Well, right. And
that's what they are.
Preet Bharara has not been very subtle in basically coming out and telling us all about that.
Yeah.
And so how closely are they going to work with the New York AG? Not the AG, the state attorney. We don't know. There's just so much going on, and behind the scenes, you still have the Senate committee,
mm-hmm.
which is
so they,
moving ahead.
Jeff Sessions, that's where he testified, was the Senate Intelligence Committee, who he is the fucking worst. He came out with his statement of sort of ferocious denial and. You know,
why am I even here?
Any implication that I, a loyal servant of this country for the last whatever years,
would collude with the Russians.
I served with honor on this committee and that, and I worked in the Justice Department. And how dare you even suggest that I had anything to do with any of this? And
actually, you were deemed too racist to be a federal judge in 1980.
That's
but
correct.
There's that.
Mm-hmm. We all knew that he was going to not answer questions. But the president did not invoke executive privilege, in part because if he did, he would lose in the courts
yeah.
in the long term because yeah. it's not applicable here, which
Plus,
we talked about last
everything
week.
He's put on record
right.
via Twitter.
If you're talking about it in public, then there is no right to executive privilege.
No,
it only applies to national security.
You've de facto waived it yourself.
So Jeff Sessions decided that
God,
he
imagine
was
being this guy's lawyer.
Invoking
Jesus.
It anyway, which is there's no legal basis for. And when asked why, he said, in case the president wants to invoke it later. And they said, that's not how it works, sir. And
right,
he said, well, it's a long history in the Department of Justice that you just don't discuss these things publicly, conversations with. And Kamala Harris was pushing him. She's amazing. And others were pushing him to say, look, that's not how this works. You have to answer questions. No. It's a longstanding, it's a principle. And she said, I don't care about the principle. That's not what this is about. I want to see the policy as written in the Department of Justice that says you don't have to answer my questions. I want to see that policy. Well, I don't have it. Well, did you look at it? Well, no, we had a discussion. Well, during that discussion, you didn't ask to see the actual policy that you were going to come here today to use to not answer our questions?
Right, yeah, she was
dogged. What you understand is da-da-da. And she's like, no, answer my question. And she got cut off. They said, John McCain, let her answer the question. And then the chair was like, Senate chair will handle this, but yeah, let him answer the question. And she's like, he's not answering my question. And then he said the same thing again, which is not answering her question. And Twitter jumped all over these fucking men. These fucking men for cutting women off. Nobody else got cut off.
Did anybody cut off McCain when he was rambling at the Comey hearing?
No, men get cut off in these things. But she's being a loud lady and yelling at the poor man, and so make sure she shuts up now.
A lady of color, no less. Uh-huh.
Lady of color is being pretty forceful to this man. Stop her from doing... Hey, make that lady be quiet. That's not nice.
It's amazing how...
It's fucking crazy.
How they have so little sense of the optics of that.
Yeah.
They just... They don't. Anyway, so... What was I going to say about all this? So... Here's the thing. The reports are, and these are very juicy, that Trump is unraveling. But we don't really know that. And you know, reporters of all stripes like clickbait. And it's great clickbait to talk about Trump yelling at TVs and talking to himself and losing his mind.
Yeah.
We don't know if that's happening. That doesn't seem far-fetched based on the way he tweets and the things he says.
Yes. And just his personality.
Here's the thing. Oh, I know he wants to fire Mueller.
Yeah.
But I'm quite sure everybody, even Bannon, are like, you can't. Dude, you can't.
You can't.
We just got to ride this out. Can't do it. We'll put up a great legal defense. You know, we'll have Fox on our side. We'll keep the core intact. We'll pass the health care bill. We'll get through this. It'll go away eventually. Clinton survived this. He even got impeached. We don't even know if you're going to get impeached. Or Bill Clinton went through the impeachment process and was exonerated. You know, ride it out, and he doesn't want to ride it out because he doesn't think he should be investigated.
Right.
Now, I'm going to go a step further because I haven't really discussed this. It's going to be hard to pin full-on collusion on Trump unless we get to the very important question that came up in Watergate, which was what did the president know and when did he know it?
Yes.
There's absolutely no doubt in my mind that his campaign colluded with Russian hackers to spread disinformation, to time the leaks, the Podesta leaks and all this other shit. There's absolutely no question in my mind.
Of course not.
Now, was Trump in on the actual decisions and minutiae of that? No. Did he know it was happening? Absolutely. Can you prove that? That's going to be really tough. That's going to be really, really tough.
I don't know if it is. I think people like Flynn don't want to protect the president at this point. I mean, I think there's at least one person who's going to say, under investigation,
Well, this is interesting.
This is the conversation that we had.
Mueller's really good and Mueller's really smart.
Yes.
And this went way under the radar, but it's really fucking important. Last night, it came out that Mueller now wants to interview the data geeks of the Trump campaign. The ones who timed the press releases and the advertising in the key swing states.
Right.
Where it also just so happens that...
That's where the Russians leaked all the emails at the same time.
At the same time.
Having to do with the same ads that they were running.
And the questions are like, okay, the Russians are very sophisticated and they understand American politics, but like they know the specific districts in Pennsylvania where that'll get play.
How?
Doesn't it make a lot more sense if there was somebody working with them to work... And Roger,
to time this shit.
And people like Roger Stone have... telegraphed that connection fairly obviously.
Yes.
So, you know, I think there could be a level of insulation. And Trump has already floated this too. Like, I can speak for myself. I can't necessarily speak for everybody who worked on my campaign. I mean, he didn't even say it that eloquently.
Right.
But
the other thing too is, even if they don't get him colluding with the Russians specifically, the other thing that Mueller's doing right now is he's going to investigate or interview Dan Coats, who told his staffers that Trump asked him to put pressure on Comey to drop the investigation. Dan Coats is not saying that publicly, but Mueller has is going to issue subpoenas for him and the other guy, who both of whom Trump came to and said, I need you to put pressure on Comey. He's not listening to me. And they told their staffers that post this meeting, and that's obstruction of justice. It just is.
Yeah, and
it just is.
And Coats and what was the other guy's name?
I can't remember.
Miller,
so sorry.
Something like that.
Yeah.
Mike something.
I can't remember.
Rogers.
Oh, yeah.
They are trying to stay out of this.
They are.
But
they're very
desperately
much
in a rock, between a rock and a hard place.
They're,
but they're going to have to talk eventually. Mueller's not going to let them off the hook.
Yeah. Now, and neither of them went to Comey and did that.
No.
But that has nothing. So they didn't do anything wrong. The problem is the president was trying to obstruct this investigation. He was trying to put pressure.
And they know it. And
they
heard it.
They know it. They heard that he did it to them. And they did not do what he asked them to do. But he fucking did it.
Yeah, that's why they were so uncomfortable and they just didn't know what the fuck to do when they were up in front of the committee. Was it last week?
Yeah,
2 weeks ago?
Yeah.
And just were just befuddled stonewalled and couldn't answer any questions. And it frustrated the hell out of everybody.
Yes.
And I was like, I get it. What the fuck are these people supposed to do?
Yeah. Testify under oath that the president for sure put pressure on them to put pressure on Comey? They can't do that.
No.
So, but they, I mean, Mueller's going to investigate them, and he's going to interview them. And
he's a really good prosecutor, and he knows what to look for. This is why Trump
and
is freaking
the fuck
out.
Are they going to perjure themselves? I mean, it's crazy. Yeah,
yeah,
no,
yeah, they can't
freaking
perjure themselves.
No, that's a crime.
Yes.
So, it should be.
Well, I mean, I'm glad you brought up perjury, because
I want to
back up. There's a lot of parallels to Watergate, but there's a lot of parallels to the Lewinsky Gate. And I'm going to explain this, right? And some people have brought this up. And here's where the parallel gets interesting. A lot of people forget. A lot of people thought that they launched an independent a blowjob commission.
Right.
But that's not what happened.
That's not why he was impeached.
What happened was the Republicans badly wanted to nail the Clintons on Whitewater.
Yeah.
Which is a real estate deal in Arkansas that went bad, and there was assuming that the Clintons did something wrong or dirty. So they investigated Whitewater, and they came up. The Republicans had a special prosecutor to look into Whitewater. They came up with nothing.
Yes,
a federal judge or a series of Republican federal judges said, "We don't like this. Let's get a new special prosecutor in to relook at it." Basically is what happened. I'm leaving out some details, but
yeah, I don't want to get too in the weeds. Yeah.
And that new special prosecutor was Ken Starr.
Right.
And Ken Starr, who's not only a garbage person, he's a dogged prosecutor.
Mm-hmm.
He lifted every stone there was, and as part of a grand jury subpoena, there was a rumor that came from Paula Jones's testimony or one of his, you know, philandering escapades that linked him somehow to Monica Lewinsky. And under oath, in grand jury testimony, Bill Clinton denied it.
Yeah.
And then Ken Starr was able to either get a hold of Lewinsky or a confidant, I think it was Linda Tripp, contacted Ken Starr.
She had tape recorded telephone conversations with Monica Lewinsky, where Lewinsky went into great detail telling her about the affair
the
she was having with the president.
And the cum stained dress.
Monica Lewinsky did not know she was being recorded at that time.
No.
Monica Lewinsky never had any intention of anyone ever finding out about her affair with the president. Monica Lewinsky was very young and in
21.
Love. And in love with this man. She loved him. And
yeah, look, let's make no bones about it. Bill Clinton's a fucking scumbag for doing this.
But some asshole recorded conversations with this young woman who's confiding in her without her knowledge and then gave it to a prosecutor and blew up her fucking life.
Mm-hmm.
Blew up her life.
So the Republicans finally got something. Ah, perjury.
Perjury.
Now, they're right. Bill Clinton did perjure himself.
He sure did.
Now, ultimately, American public.
None of your fucking business. Why was that even a question being asked during
the American public?
You should have just said it's none of your fucking business.
Anyway, the point is the economy was humming along. Bill Clinton was pretty popular. The American public said, oh, come on, please. And it kind of blew up in the Republicans' faces.
It did.
But
because the American people did not care.
But the point is they went after Clinton on this one thing. And then with the tentacles reaching into every part of his life.
Yep.
Turned over every stone they could find until they found something.
That's right.
And that's what Trump is afraid of.
Yes.
The flip side of that is, okay, well, maybe they'll find some untowardly economic things, but we can skate on that because look at what happened with Clinton. But I don't know, man.
No.
I don't know.
He's a money launderer. The reason he's so close to the Russians is because the Russians launder money through the mob.
He helps the mob launder money through
real estate.
Yeah.
And that's why he is allowed to fail constantly, because it's not about the real estate. It's about laundering money.
Yeah. And that is so complex.
Yes.
And so, and like, if you go back, Kagro does a pretty good job of laying this all out. Our friend Kagro in the morning, David Waldman. But it's very arcane and it's very complicated. But basically, these Russian mobsters create what are called shell companies.
Yep.
Like the Freedom Bald Eagle Real Estate LLC, right? Yeah. Some bullshit like that.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
And they buy these distressed properties just as a front. They might resell them or whatever, or let Trump's family live there or whatever the fuck they do with it. But they do that to dump this dirty mob money into the United States, and then they might sell it at a loss, or they might, you know, chop it up into shares or whatever the fuck they do with it. Then they get nice, clean American greenbacks that are not mob related out of it.
Right. Because it's just people staying in hotels.
Yes.
And then you just deposit that money into
right, or a real estate transaction. Yeah. I bought this property and then I sold it to my friend who happens to be another friend of Donald Trump it's like, wow, it was listed at $250,000 and you sold it for $1 million. Yeah. Well, I got a good deal out of it. Whatever.
Uh-huh.
Good deal. Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah.
Or vice versa. Maybe it's worth $1.5 million. They sell it for $500,000. Whatever. The point is, these shell company LLCs use the United States real estate market with the help of Trump and his associates to launder mob money.
The New York mob.
And the New York mob is in on it, too.
Yeah. They go through the New York mob to get to people like Trump. And then once those connections are made, and also probably the New York mob's laundering money through his properties as well. So if Mueller really is going to do a robust investigation, he's going to uncover a lot of this shit.
Well, here's the problem, right? It's not like we would call up the New York state attorney and tell them, wow, I didn't know that. Like, they know.
Yeah.
It's just really hard to prove.
Yeah.
They're
very good at it.
That's one thing I like about the show Billions is that, it's a little, it's off the wall and it's goofy, but what it really harps on is, okay, we know this terrible, horrible thing is happening.
Yes.
What can we prove?
Yep.
And
these people are smart. They've been doing it for a century. I mean, really, the mob's been laundering money since there was
a mob.
Yeah. So they're really good at it.
Oh, no, the mob's been laundering money. If you go back in Sicilian and Italian city-state history with the earliest banking systems to the popes in the 1500s.
Right, exactly. Yeah.
Like, they figured out how to move money through banks, like, for hundreds of years.
Yes.
Yeah.
They've been doing this for a really long time.
Yeah, yeah.
They know how to do it. So it's really hard to prove.
And the American system of shell companies and LLCs makes it even easier.
Yes. Yes. So I think that the obstruction of justice is easier to explain and easier for the average American to wrap their head around and easier to prove, probably. But I do think that a robot, that's why he fired that guy, the Justice Department guy, Bahara?
Preet Bharara.
Because that was his big game, right? He investigated
financial
stuff.
And then Trump tried to get to him to talk him out of it, and Preet wouldn't even take his fucking calls,
yeah.
And then he got fired.
Mm-hmm.
And
he did not want that man investigating anything.
I think I would be very, and this hasn't been announced yet, and might not be announced because Preet's a smart guy and he would want to keep this on the down low. If and when Mueller is talking to Bharara, then if I'm Trump, I'm really fucking nervous.
Really nervous. Yeah.
Yeah.
Yep. So the financial stuff may ultimately take him and his family down in a bigger way than just losing the presidency.
Well, they got Capone on tax evasion, right?
Yeah.
I mean, people bring up that, but, you know, I mean, here's Elliot Ness, and he's like, the guy's a fucking murderer, and he's got brothels and shit all over town. You know, we can't get a local jury to convict because they're all bribed, they're all paid off. It's like, well, what about the federal government? Well, murder's not a federal crime.
We can't prove he did it across state lines. It's the only way it would be.
Well,
now we have RICO, which is the...
And then somebody said, I bet this guy doesn't pay any fucking taxes. Mm-hmm. And they're like, we know who his bookkeeper is, right? It's like, yeah, but he's just a bookkeeper. Get the bookkeeper.
Yeah.
They got the bookkeeper.
Yeah.
The bookkeeper squealed. And yeah. That's how Capone went down.
That's right. Taxes.
See, taxes.
That's right. So, yeah, it's... Don't fuck around.
Yeah, and money laundering is a state.
Money laundering is coming international. It's a federal thing. Yeah.
Well, it depends on what money you're laundering.
Sure.
Right?
Where you're doing it.
I think it's technically a state statute, though. So I think it would be the New York Attorney General.
We'd have to look into it further. But I
know Schneiderman is
pretty sure that the. IRS probably would have something to say, and the Securities and Exchange Commission maybe, or I mean, there's got to be.
Yeah, but those are all under the auspices of the executive now.
Yeah.
So that's where it gets really complicated.
But we have Mueller for now. I don't know what will happen. I don't have a crystal ball.
There's some people that are just assuming it's just a matter of days, maybe weeks, that Trump does the Saturday Night Massacre and hopes for the best. Mm-hmm. Which I don't think is a bad strategy, given how ridiculous this Congress is right now.
Yeah.
People keep comparing it to Watergate. Yeah, the shit was partisan, and yeah, they were running cover for Nixon until they couldn't. But I don't know where that couldn't line is with this Congress.
I don't either.
And I think the threshold is way higher than it was for Nixon.
I agree completely. One more Trump thing. I want to talk about the cabinet meeting. In front of the press. Did you?
Wow. Was that...
The glorious leader and...
Was that creepy and weird and in any other environment would have been... It was a Saturday Night Live sketch, basically.
What happened was he had a cabinet meeting, which presidents do. And he invited all the press and news media into the cabinet meeting, which presidents do not do. And then he went around the table of his cabinet members, starting with Mike Pence.
I thought it was starting with Ranch Bibas, or was he last?
He was last. Mike Pence, Daddy Pence. And they went around that this is not a joke. I'm not making this up. I watched it with my own eyes. I almost puked afterward, but it's serious. They went around the table and all told the president how amazing and glorious he was. Mike Pence said it's the greatest honor of my life.
How honored they were.
How honored they were to be working for the president, how amazing the president is, how extraordinary his accomplishments have been, what an incredible guy he is, the honor of their life to work. It was seriously the craziest thing I've ever seen in my life.
It really was. And try to imagine any other president of the United States. Like, it's literally something that you see in a North Korean propaganda news clip.
Literally. Or our glorious leader. And won't he save us?
A Central American dictator going around the room to his generals.
Yes.
I mean, that's what it was.
Yes.
And it was so transparently that.
It was so bizarre and gross.
Even other conservatives were just shaking their head and being like,
what the fuck was that? What is that? What are you doing? What is that? And all these people are complicit. Like, I guess one of the generals was just sort of like, I'm with the troops, and yeah.
Was McMaster in the room? I don't remember. I don't think so.
I didn't see him say anything.
I know Pence was there,
anything.
And Ranch Bibas was
Pubis,
there.
Ben Carson.
DeVos, I want to say, mm-hmm. I think was there.
All of his cabinet. Fucking Rick Perry. Tillerson. So yeah, they just all went around it in like a giant...
Circle jerk.
Suck Trump's dick, isn't he?
No,
so crazy.
Yeah, it literally was like, it wasn't even the kind of thing like, we're excited to work on all these initiatives.
No.
And it was like, you, Donald Trump, I am so honored and so proud and so glad, and you have given me this wonderful opportunity, and I am so, I mean, it was literally like in, I want to say 1968, when Saddam Hussein launched a coup and took over the Iraqi parliament, they went around the room and everybody pledged their loyalty to Saddam Hussein. And those who didn't literally got taken by soldiers. And this was all filmed.
Yeah.
Dragged out, and they were either shot or hung or whatever they were outside
Jesus
of the parliamentary
Christ.
Room. But like, it was that. Because I've seen that video and it's chilling and freakish and horrifying. And it's like, yeah, that's what a crazy ass dictator does.
Yeah. That's exactly what it felt like. And I'm like, I'm watching a dictator talk, and it's the president.
Because there was so much other crazy shit happening, the press kind of looked at it and said, that was weird, and moved on.
Uh-huh.
It's like, it was a Saturday Night Live sketch.
Yeah, it was, but not funny. Like, really horrifying.
It was funny and not funny at the same time. Like, I couldn't help but laugh because of the absurdity.
Yeah.
But then I was also like, this is the president of the United States.
This is terrifying.
What is happening here?
What is happening? I don't know.
It's like, God, Ranch Peebus really wants to save his job. He, man.
I guess so.
God.
I mean, I
encourage you to watch it. Look up Trump cabinet presser or Trump cabinet something.
Yep.
Like, you have to see it to believe it. Like,
because I know you think if you have not seen it, that I'm being hyperbolic or weird or crazy. No. I'm legitimately, this happened.
Like, you can't, even if you know nothing about politics and you haven't paid attention, you watch this, you're just going to be, what the fuck am I watching?
Yes.
It is surreal.
Yes. And it actually happened.
It's literally like a Kim Jong-un propaganda piece.
Yeah.
Not even. Kim Jong-il, who was even a little more flamboyant.
Yes.
Like, that's the kind of shit, like, dear leader, you are so wonderful, and all these amazing things you are doing for the great, glorious country.
You're the god of the country, you're the everything. Like, you're my life. You're my one true hope for humanity. And it's like... Actually, you're a fucking mass murdering dickhead dictator, but, you know, it's fine. People are starving in the streets, but we don't want anyone to know.
That's what you have to say.
You have to say that.
You have to say that.
And that's what Trump just did.
Yeah.
It's fucked up.
And I know Pence and Rince aren't being threatened with the firing squad, so for them to debase themselves just for Trump is even more...
No one can get to him. You have to imagine that someone... Or multiple someones came to him and said, don't do this. This is really fucking weird.
I think it was impromptu. I don't think anybody had time. Like, okay, we're going to have this press conference, and you are all going to say how wonderful it is to work for me and work on my initiatives. Every single one of you. Do it. And they're just like, shit, okay, I'll come up with something on the spot.
Yeah. Yeah.
Yeah, I'm sure, like, he didn't run it past his advisors or Bannon or maybe Bannon or Ivanka or... Jared, God knows who else.
It's horrifying.
It's hard to know who's advising him these days and who he's listening to, and who's not listening to.
Like, there was even rumors that, speaking of that he's super pissed at Jeff Sessions this week.
Yeah, they thought he was going to fire Sessions earlier.
Agreed to resign,
in the week.
Like, offered his resignation earlier in the week. It was leaked because Trump. So this is the craziest part of this narcissistic crazy person. He is super upset with Sessions because he believes that Sessions recusing himself from the Russia investigation is what caused Mueller to happen. He refuses to take responsibility for his firing of Comey being the reason that Mueller happened and is blaming Sessions for recusing himself.
Okay, well, Sessions obviously couldn't take that heat every day if he didn't recuse himself, right?
Right.
And that would shine just a bigger, brighter spotlight on him.
Right, it's a crazy thing to think.
You understand completely, like... Sessions is not off the hook by any means, but by recusing himself when he did, that turned the spotlight off of his ass and back onto Trump.
That's right.
Yeah.
And Trump believes not that his firing of Comey is what sparked the Mueller investigation, but Sessions' recusal.
Well, he's going to blame everybody but himself.
Yes. And so Sessions was like, fuck it, I'll resign if you want me to. And Trump's like, I don't know.
I don't know if he said that, but Bannon or somebody said, no, Sessions can't resign. He needs to be at the helm of the DOJ
fuck's
sake.
He's just racist enough. We can't find another racist as great as him.
It's not that even that he's racist enough. Ultimately, no matter what the DOJ does, it's still Sessions at the helm, and Sessions has his own self-interest. You know, you push him out of the way, then you've really lost a measure of control.
Yes.
You can't fucking do that. I don't care how pissed you are at him. He's got to be there.
Yeah.
You know, and they talked him out of that for now. But who knows with this guy?
I know. I think they're like, no more firing. Can we just not fire anybody?
Yeah, because that looks bad. Because it looks like you're in disarray.
And it looks like you're fucking guilty.
Yeah.
If you keep firing everyone who's investigating you, it does not look good.
Right.
Stop firing people.
And that was Nixon's gambit because he was out of cards to play.
Yes.
He's like, this is the buzzards are swarming and sort of...
My last ditch hope is just fire everybody.
Yeah.
Yeah.
That
didn't work out.
And maybe I'll skate by. And ultimately, I think Trump might do the same thing because that might be his best move.
And And I think in Nixon's case, there was just really the one thing. I think Trump knows there's probably a mountain of shit that Mueller's going to find.
Or could find, potentially.
And maybe it's better to just fire him and take the heat for that than to have him uncover the mountain of shit that's hiding in his closet.
And hope Congress does nothing. Mm-hmm. Said, look, hey, you want your precious taxes and your health care bill and whatever the fuck to happen, and you want to have a chance in hell in 2018, you better cover for me.
Yeah.
Or I will get all my people in all the exurbs to not vote Republican. I mean, God only knows what he's going to say. Anyway, on that note, it's going to wrap it up. Keep your eye on what happens this week. I don't know what's going to happen.
No.
He might
fucking
do
no.
a Saturday Night Massacre. He might not. I just honestly don't know with this guy.
No. But anyway, that's going to do it for us, yeah?
Yep. Stay
active.
We're
going to go to Pride.
Gonna
Happy
go to Pride.
Pride.
Stay active. Stay tuned. Stay involved. At Irreverent Duo on Twitter. IrreverentTestimony@gmail.com. If you want to contribute, patreon.com/irreverenttestimony. Okay. Have a great weekend. Bye.